Decking show number 425 for Thursday, February the 18th, 1930. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and I left a large blank here where I was supposed to write an opening joke. Tonight, we have Fox.
Oh.
What are you drinking, Fox?
I am currently drinking Dirty Wookie.
I don't know that one.
Made it by Brewer's Cabinet. Their local brewery here in Reno. It is a Imperial Brown Ale.
Nice,
quite good,
very nice. Yeah, I'm last one, so kind of hope the snow lets up so I can go get some more. I've got a Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale right now. And RU is here, and we're not even going to ask what RU's drinking.
Just the tears of clouds.
Clouds, clowns.
Dang. At this point.
How often do you have to kick the clown to get tears out of him, though?
Fairly hard.
Oh.
So, IRC is rather dead. We were just joking before we started recording that everybody must be in Texas. So, actually, that really would suck right now, especially if your entire, career and everything's based around the internet and you have no power.
Yeah. I knew there were a lot of places in some of my old jobs, we're based out of Plano, Texas, and a lot of call centers and things like that there. So yeah, I'm sure there's quite a few people having a bad time of it.
Yeah, we got an office down there too that's all out. Go ahead, Ari.
I mean, especially if they're not of our mindset sort of thing. Mm. Everyone laughs at you when you're doing it. And when you need it, everyone's begging for you to help.
And I will look down at them and I will whisper, no. Oh, I think I was talking too quietly. I don't know if that actually came through TeamSpeak or not. I did the whisper no joke.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Okay. But, I mean, there are certain people that are going to be having a hell of a good time right now. You know? Those with generators.
Mm-hmm.
Those who... maybe squirreled away a little extra food and bottles of brown spirits sitting in the cupboard at the back that have been sitting there for a couple of years and never need to be opened.
Mm-hmm.
Then we start discovering the people who are good at improvising. I'm going to run my car in my garage to warm things up.
yes, the Darwin Award winners.
Those are the ones that hold my beer. Trust me, I got this.
I'm waiting to see how many people we hear burn down an apartment complex because they turned on the oven and left the door open to, try to heat the place up.
I know we have a bit of a giggle, but the death toll, I think, will be up there.
Oh, man, I hope not.
Oh, yeah, I hope not too, man, but I've read a couple of stories already.
I want to make jokes about stupid people improvising ways to, well, it's cold, so I'm going to find something that burns. This bookcase should burn. So they light the bookcase on fire. And, I want to make stupid jokes like that. I don't want to think about people actually freezing to death in their homes.
People lighting fires in ornamental fireplaces and shit like that, that's the thing that gets me.
Mm-hmm.
But,
kind of fall back to the Darwin Award thing. It's like, if you're dumb enough to do something like that, you should probably just remove yourself from the gene pool.
Found him frozen to death, sitting in front of an iPad playing a video of a fire.
it'd be nice if we could just hold off the go fuck yourselves for now, just wait till it's over and then we can all gloat. So many people, man, just, you were going to succeed, now you can't even fucking heat your house. Like, come on, man, just let them have it. Let them get through it then.
Texas hasn't talked about seceding in years.
It's a couple of tweets I've seen last couple of days from big smooth brain people out there.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Rogan. Fuck your career now.
Wouldn't put much stock in the tweets.
Oh, no. It's like the dick fucks that, were
You can't even get a president impeached with tweets. I mean, you know.
Yeah. You know, shitting all over Limbaugh dying yesterday. Right.
You know, I used to listen to Rush a little off and on. I enjoyed him. I didn't, he wasn't always right about everything, but it was fun to listen to him.
I mean, he wasn't you.
Well.
Not everyone can always be right, Morbs.
I mean, when you think about it,
makes me an arrogant asshole, doesn't it?
When you think about it, the only other person to have global reach like that is Alex Jones.
Mm.
I mean,
did Alex have as big an audience as Rush?
No. But he had the global reach. People knew him. Like, I knew Alex Jones before I hopped on the internet. I knew Limbaugh before I hopped on the internet.
Yeah.
Like, because there were, you know, tapes and stuff like that floating around. Like, everyone.
Well, I actually heard Limbaugh on the radio. Alex Jones, you heard on a shortwave radio, you know, while, you know, out camping in the woods. It was.
Yeah. You know, for an Australian to hear about both those people.
That's true. Yeah.
It's, well, I mean, you got to be out. You got to be global.
You know, like him or hate him, you got to respect the fact that the dude spent, you know, 30 some odd years building the largest AM radio audience there ever was.
So. Yeah, and, you know, I know Steven Crowder doesn't listen to this show, but shit, man, tone it down. You ain't that fucking big yet, boy. Yeah.
What did Crowder say?
He was running a little close up to the mark on today's show, I think, you know, comparing himself to Rush. I thought it was, I know you're the biggest conservative dude out there at the moment, but you are nowhere near his level, right? Because you got to remember, Rush Limbaugh, he started 30 years ago and then stayed at the top for 30 fucking years. Yeah. You know what I mean? He, most people get lucky and get maybe 6 months of decent notoriety and fame.
Well,
and,
let's see. Yeah.
Then it's all downhill.
I mean, if you're on the internet, you're lucky to get the full 6 months.
If, you know.
Yeah.
Would I want his notoriety? Hell no. You know? I hear him eulogized lately, the more I think, man, the guy had a pretty strong constitution. Knew what he was about, knew what he wanted. And he went out and got it and didn't care what anyone else said.
Well, the one thing I would always really respect about him was, you know, you listen to some of his skits and you know, it would take you a bit to tune into his humor. But you're right. He had his principles. Now, he didn't live up to them, obviously. I think that was wife number four when he died.
Yeah, but... And he had a drug problem, things like that, but he never shied away from it. He was like, well, yes, that did happen, and I took steps to overcome that, and, you know, it happened to me. It could happen to you. Like, he didn't go, I don't want to talk about that, or that's all in the past. He's like, yeah, I owned it. It happened. And fuck, it's opioid addiction, man. There aren't many people around who haven't been addicted to opioids at this point. Who have had any major surgery or an accident.
Well, I mean, you know, he came into them the way a lot of people do. Had something happen, he was in pain.
Yeah.
They started giving him the opioids, and then you get addicted to them.
That's how I got it. That's how I ended up,
we know,
down that path.
We know several people who've, you know, gotten close to it anyways, touched it.
Yeah, I doubt he was out there hustling for heroin.
No.
If you know what I mean.
Well, no, for like, one, he had enough money, he didn't have to, but, you know.
I didn't have enough, I didn't have much money, and I still got all the opioids I ever needed from the doctor.
Sure.
You know, never had to lie either. Just
say you're in pain, yeah.
Well, the level of my injury and the amount of pain that comes with it, you know, anyone out there struggling with it, good luck. It's a hard road.
Well, if you need help, get it. Don't.
Oh yeah, don't try to do this shit on your own like I did. Like, you're gonna be having a bad 2 fucking weeks, man. Just go Go watch Trainspotting. Yes, you will see a baby crawl on the ceiling at one point.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, you would hop on and I'd say, well, I just did self-surgery. It's like, wait, what? Fuck! So, you know, I mean, it would get a little out there. But, where I was going to go is that, you know, he had his principles. He didn't always live up to them, but he did have them. And he was pretty consistent with them. And if you're going to participate in politics, that's really what you need to have. And you need to have it nailed down. Because if your politics consists of you're supporting a Trump or an Obama or a Biden, or you're following a particular media person, you know, whether it's a Limbaugh or it's a Hannity or a Maddow or I forget the name of the little punk on CNN.
I'm trying to be a straight, successful man.
Yeah,
Stelter.
The bald guy. I can't think of his name.
Yeah, I'm pretending to be a heterosexual Stelter.
Stelter. Thank you. I couldn't think of his name. So, you know, if you're always buying into one of these people's opinions as opposed to understanding what they're espousing and why you might think what you think, I'm not saying you're wrong, but you haven't examined your ideas. And if you haven't done that, you're not ever going to be able to have a real political discussion. You're just going to be arguing my authority versus your authority.
Well, you've got to remember
that you've heard without any understanding of what's
going on. And that's how you get to the point of people getting upset and bike locking each other over a political fight, and as opposed to being able to sit down and discuss why they disagree.
You got to understand, too, those people, like you were just pointing out there, your Stelters, your Maddows, your Tuckers, your those guys, their political persuasions switch depending on who's paying the bills.
That's also extraordinarily true.
Where Rush had that ability where he was a self-made man, no one paid him but himself. So he could stand on those principles. You know, it's when you're getting a paycheck, you have no principles.
And that's something I appreciated about, you know, when I would listen to him, which admittedly, it'd been a bit. I used to listen to him pretty regularly, pretty much right out of college for a while. But, you know, I think I quit listening to him regularly, I want to say 15 years ago now. Occasionally, if you'd catch it, be like, oh, yeah, sure. You know, see a clip online or something, but...
Yeah, that's the only extent I really had his interaction with him. But, you know, he built a fucking empire. I'll give him that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't take that away from the man, and just wish his family good luck going forward. Not that I know them or anything, but I think they've been left with a pretty good nest egg.
I was going to say, hopefully they don't squander all the money.
Yeah.
Because apparently, you know, you hear a lot of people talking about, apparently the dude tipped like mad whenever he went anywhere and buy people stuff all the time. So, but well, I mean, he was getting paid pretty well, pretty good there at the end.
I mean, he must be getting paid a good chunk of change to have four fucking ex-wives.
Yeah.
<That's laughs> four lots of alimony, man. You know what I mean? That's
he's lost half of his shit four times and still has,
and still has a lot of shit. You know what I mean? So, you know, you can't take much away from the man when it comes to success.
He has like some rock solid prenups.
That too.
Well, I'm sure by the third one he would have.
God, you
I mean,
hope, right?
What woman goes into a relationship with him and goes, I didn't see that coming. It's like no Alex Jones's wife must be the strongest, funniest woman alive. You know, can you imagine having to live with that? I just... look at that, and I just get, geez, I feel bad for my wife sometimes when I'm sitting there ranting and raving. You know. Well, anyway, let's get on with the show.
Speaking of squandering a huge amount of money, first one is from Citibank here, and the story's about Citibank. The first one's from Ars Technica. Citibank just got a $500 million lesson in the importance of UI design. A federal judge ruled that Citibank isn't entitled to the return of $500 million it sent to various creditors last August. Kludgy software and poorly designed user interface contributed to the massive screw-up. Citibank was acting as an agent for Revlon, which owed hundreds of millions of dollars to various creditors. On August 11th, Citibank was supposed to send out interest payments totaling $7.8 million to these creditors. Let's see here. However, Revlon was in the process of refinancing its debt, paying off a few creditors while rolling the rest of its debt into a new loan. And this, combined with the confusing interface of the financial software called FlexCube, led the bank to accidentally pay the principal on the entire loan, most of which wasn't due until 2023. Yeah, here's how Judge Jesse Furman describes the situation. On FlexCube, the easiest or perhaps only way to execute the transaction to pay the Angelo Gordon lenders their share of the principal and interim interest as of August 11, 2020, and then to reconstitute the 2016 term loan with the remaining lenders was to enter it into the system as paying off the loan in its entirety, thereby triggering accrued interest payments to all lenders, but to direct the principal portion of the payment to a WASH account, an internal Citizens Bank account, to help ensure that the money does not leave the bank. The actual work of entering this transaction into FlexCube fell to a subcontractor in India named Aroka Raj. He was presented a FlexCube screen that looks like this. And if you've ever seen internal financial software, they all look like this. Mm-hmm. Raj thought that checking the principal checkbox and entering the number of a Citibank WASH account would ensure that the principal payment would stay at Citibank. He was wrong. I just love that one little sentence. He was wrong. Mm-hmm. To prevent payment of the principal, Raj actually needed to set the front and fund of fields to the WASH account as well as the principal. Raj didn't do that. Citibank procedures required that three people sign off on a transaction of this size. In this case, that was Raj, a colleague of his in India, and a senior Citibank official in Delaware named Vincent Fratta. Oh, they're putting these people's names out there. They're never going to have employment in the financial industry again.
I think that's why. It ain't a small amount.
All three believed that setting the principal field to an internal WASH account number would prevent payment of the principal. As he approved the transaction, Fratta wrote, "Looks good. Please proceed. Principal is going to WASH." Yeah, I like the heading here. Revlon's creditors were delighted. Of course they were. They just got
paid
a lot of money. But the principal wasn't going to WASH. When Raj conducted a routine review the next morning, he noticed there was something drastically off about the previous day figures. Citibank had actually sent out almost $900 million, not the $7.8 million it was trying to send. Citibank then... go ahead.
Don't these companies have an internal auditor that's meant to be separate from the company that looks over all these financial transactions over a certain amount?
Quarterly.
As to make sure they're legit.
Quarterly.
But Raj shouldn't have caught this. The internal auditor should. I'm just throwing it out there, man.
It's probably one of those things like he came in, opened up that financial app, and saw like $9 million.
Yeah, the total's
not where it should be. And pooped a little.
He probably ran his daily reports and got the wrong totals and looked into it and said, "What the hell?" So, Citibank then scrambled to get the funds back, notifying each creditor that the principal payments that had been made by mistake. Some of the creditors sent the money back, but others refused, leaving Citibank out $500 million. That's kind of those creditors to say, "Oh, you messed up. Here's your money back."
Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
they don't have to do it. These are wires. So, to put this in perspective, if you've not dealt with this on the banking system, there's a few different ways of moving money around. You know, you have your mostly consumer ways of moving money around. That's going to be things like, you know, a check, you know, money orders, using credit.
ACH transfer, yeah.
Yeah, basic bank transfers, things like that. Wires are movements from account to account on the back end of the banking system. And you can do them. You go into your bank and say, "I want to send a wire to this account." They'll do it for you. They're expensive to do, which is why they only usually do them for large fees. But wires are basically cash. So if I wire $1 million from account A at Citi to account B at, I don't know, Bank of America, and the holder of you know, account B decides they're going to fuck off to Amsterdam with the money. I can't do anything about it because I have essentially moved the cash from account one to account two. So if the other bank isn't returning the money, there's not a lot I can actually do about it. Now, a lot of banks will work with each other on the back end and reverse wires if they think they're fraudulent or something like that. But it's like a gentleman's agreement. It's, oh yeah, something bad happened. Hey, we're working with you. We're all in the same, you know, we're all in the same game. So it's like professional courtesy. It's not ensconced in law. There is no protection if you do a wire from account A to account B. This comes up especially where most average consumers would come into this is their mortgage. So when you got a mortgage to buy your house, your mortgage lender wired the money to the person you were purchasing the house from, specifically at closing. They would have given the they would have the instructions at your close to say, okay, here's the account where you actually pay for the house, and they do a wire because you're moving that much money around, as opposed to doing the, you know, old school movie trick of you know, having a briefcase full of cash, for example, or writing absurdly large checks. Cykros has shown up in the IRC, and he said it's like a Bitcoin payment. Once it's made, it's made. Yes, absolutely. You are absolutely correct. Once it's moved, it's moved. You know, if somebody's not fulfilling their end of the contract, you have a contract violation. But, and where I see this a lot is people doing bank fraud, where they'll wire something into the wrong account, usually by spoofing an email and getting somebody to say, oh, yeah. So where I run into it is they actually will hack into realtors' email systems and just watch until somebody buys a house. And then, like, a few days before the house is due to close, they will take a copy of the bank's the bank they're working with, their wire transfer instructions. They'll take that document, they'll Photoshop it, and you can tell it's Photoshopped when you look at them because usually the numbers don't line up perfectly with the form. They'll Photoshop in a different bank account number, and 9 times out of 10, it is Bank of America for some reason. And send, oh yeah, we've just changed our wire transfer instructions. Use this account. Now, I'm not going to speak about how many have made it past versus how many we've caught. I will say, on the ones I've investigated, we've never actually lost money. Might have had to get it back from another bank, which is why I know about those gentlemen's agreements. But usually the other bank went, hey, something's up with this account. Let's lock this out. And then they get the request from us and they go, uh-huh, and they send it back. But, you know, and a lot of times we've been catching them before they make the change, luckily, somebody, because, you know, basically I instituted a rule. If you're going to update wire transfer instructions, you have to call your contact at the bank and verify them. That simple step eliminates so much crap. And, oh, you can't use a phone number in the email with the updated wire transfer instructions. You have to use your regular contact email. And you wouldn't believe the bitching from brokers. I don't have time to do that. So you have the time to lose somebody's mortgage? I mean, really? But what usually happens, you know, when I've talked to some FBI guys about this, because, I've been involved. If they don't flag the accounts and block the money from leaving them, the fraudsters will usually immediately start wiring that money out to overseas accounts as fast as they fucking can, and they will burn so much of that money, muling it around so that they don't get caught, that they might get a third of the value of what they stole. The rest of it's just burned in fees, wire transfers, and, you know, paying their the term is mule, but basically they have people who think they have jobs for an overseas company where they're basically accepting a accepting checks and then depositing them in other accounts. They think they're an account manager. They're doing what's called integration, and you know
they know what they're doing, Morphs. You're just trying to be polite. They know what they fucking do.
I'd like to think most of them know what they're doing and, you know, say, hey, it's a payday, but I've met some really dumb people. So point is, I'm not surprised a couple of these creditors told Citi to get stuffed. Ordinarily, paying back a loan early wouldn't be a big deal. You know, back to the story here, since the parties could simply negotiate a new loan on similar terms. But in this case, some of the lenders were not on good terms with Revlon and Citibank. So it's like, yeah, we got our money, we're out. Psychro says he got an offer to do the whole accounts management thing 10 years ago or so. Oh, yeah, they spam the fuck out of people. It was going to somehow get at your own money. They do sometimes because they want you putting it through your personal accounts, and sometimes they'll ask for access to verify it. So yeah, they sometimes do after they've, you know, laundered money through you, clean you out and run away. But yeah, if they don't block it at that first transfer and it gets out, that money's gone. And then you have that very fun conversation of the people who were trying to sell the house never got paid, yet the people who were trying to buy the house paid the money. Who fucked up? Is it the bank? Is it the mortgage broker who wired the money to the wrong account? Is it the realtor who got hacked and sent the bad instructions to the mortgage broker? And these are all, you know, large financial institutions having this shit fight. So, you know, usually the buyers fucked over, and sometimes the banks will still come after them for saying, you've got to pay your mortgage. It's like, but I didn't get the house.
Yeah.
So, you know, you want to talk about fucking up somebody's life. So I don't think very highly of people who complain at me that it's too big of a deal to go double check the wire transfer instructions. Anyways. Earlier this year, as the pandemic was accelerating, Revlon experienced financial difficulties and sought to borrow more money. To do that, Revlon convinced a majority of its previous creditors to allow it to transfer collateral from its old loan to a new one. The strong-arm tactic angered the other creditors, who felt that the reduced collateral could leave them holding the bag if Revlon ever ran out of money. That's more than a theoretical concern. Bloomberg's Matt Levine reports that Revlon's debt is trading at about 42 cents on the dollar. Okay, that's low. Now, admittedly, when you're dealing with buying other people's debt, it's usually not dollar for dollar. But 42, you know, being less than half, that's not a lot of confidence in your company there, buddy. But under the terms of the loan, the minority lenders didn't have a way to force early repayment. So Citibank's screw-up allowed Revlon's creditors to claw back their cash that might otherwise have never gotten back. And it could leave Revlon in a precarious financial situation if the company can't get the money back from the old lenders and can't find new lenders willing to replace the funds. Though given its screw-up, Citibank could just possibly end up being as Revlon's new creditor. Actually, Revlon can sue Citibank and say, we didn't tell them to repay that loan early.
Mm-hmm.
As far as we're concerned, they're still holding our loans. So that's going to end up as a shit fight in court.
Yeah.
Citibank sued, arguing it was entitled to get the money back since the cash was sent out by mistake. That's not how wires work. Ordinarily, the law would be on Citibank's side here. Under New York law, someone who sends out an erroneous wire transfer, for example, sending a payment to the wrong account, is entitled to get the money back. Okay. That's what the law says. That's not how the system works. the law makes an exception when a debitor accidentally wires money to a creditor. In that case, the creditor doesn't have prior knowledge the payment was a mistake. It's free to treat it as repayment of the loan. Judge Furman ruled that the principle applies here. Even though Citibank notified its creditors of the mistake the very next day, the defendants noted that the amounts they received matched the amounts Revlon owed down to the penny, making it reasonable for them to assume it was an earlier payment of the loan. Furman also argued that it was reasonable for the creditors to assume that a bank as sophisticated as Citibank wouldn't send out such a large amount of money by accident. To believe that Citibank, one of the most sophisticated financial institutions in the world, had made a mistake that had never happened before to the tune of nearly $1 billion would have been borderline irrational, he wrote. The case isn't over, however. Furman has ordered the creditors to keep the funds in escrow to give Citibank time to appeal his ruling. So he's covering his butt. We strongly disagree with the decision and intend to appeal, Citibank said in a statement. We believe we are entitled to the funds and will continue to pursue a complete recovery of them. So, again, when you do wires, you are moving cash. It's not like a credit card. It's not like writing a check. It's not a delayed transaction that you can do something about. It's moving cash from account to an account. It's a bank transfer. Now, the law says when it's made an error, you have a chance. You should be able to recover it. That's the law saying, you know, you shouldn't be stolen from because you made a mistake. But, I mean, yeah, that's a excuse me. I don't doubt for one bit that this software that Citibank uses is confusing as balls, because any sophisticated major financial institution, getting them to update their software to modern standards.
Oh, good God.
I will tell you, the screenshot they have posted here where they're showing their example, that looks like some old school Java applet web 2.0 shit. So that is most likely running in an ancient version of Java on... and it's probably talking to an AS400 on the back end. So,
they're fancy. They actually have a GUI for it.
Well, there was a whole slew of consultancy companies that wrote screen scraping software to either put into early web interfaces through CGI or things like these Java applets. So I don't doubt that their software is that messed up and that they had a subcontractor in India doing these financial moves, because, well, I've been dealing with some similar issues, and I don't doubt that subcontractor in India or that entire company is probably going to be out of its contract, and the manager who approved it without catching it. But really, when you have...
Oh, his security escorted him out.
Oh, I'm sure. But in all seriousness, when you have in-house developed software like this, or even if it's like contractor developed, it's a functionally in-house software. They didn't buy this from a big software vendor. This is some custom job somebody put together for Citibank's system. You need to put very good instructions together for this when you do this. I have seen many in-house software packages that nobody ever bothered to document, and then you have teams of people combing through them trying to figure them out years later, because everyone who knows how they work quit. So, you know, this all comes down to they didn't understand how this software worked and that they had to put this account number in a few other places so that it would do what they wanted. That's not intuitive. It doesn't make sense. But somebody wrote it that way because it made sense to them. And, yeah, I don't doubt that this went down exactly as they said in the story, especially with the screenshot there of that Java toolkit. We done with that one?
I'm good.
All right. I thought Fox might have... Oh, he's muted. Well, that explains that. Next article. This one is from The Verge, although we were talking about it a little bit before we started the show. NVIDIA is purposely making its new RTX 3060 graphics cards less efficient to mine Ethereum cryptocurrency. The new drivers that will accompany the release of the GPUs later this month will reduce the hash rate of Ethereum mining by about 50% using software detection for cryptocurrency mining. We designed GeForce GPUs for games, and gamers are clamoring for more, says Matt Webbing, head of global GeForce marketing at NVIDIA. Yet NVIDIA GPUs are programmable, and users are constantly discovering new applications for them, from weather simulation and gene sequencing to deep learning and robotics. Mining cryptocurrency is one of them. It's clear NVIDIA is making the changes to try to help with the availability of its GeForce products. NVIDIA is offering a new cryptocurrency mining processor for Ethereum miners instead. These will include the best performance for mining inefficiency, but they won't handle graphics at all. NVIDIA says the CPM products, crucially, don't impact the availability of GeForce GPUs to gamers. The CPM products won't have display inputs, so they can be more densely packed into systems designed for mining. NVIDIA is also ensuring CMPs have lower peak core voltage and frequency to improve the big power requirements associated with Ethereum mining. With CMP, we can help miners build the most efficient data centers while preserving GeForce RTX GPUs for games, said Webbing. While the introduction of dedicated option for miners is welcome, NVIDIA's move to specifically nerf mining performance on the RTX 3060 is likely to receive some criticism. It's an artificial limit imposed with software restrictions that's been put in place because NVIDIA is struggling to make enough GPUs to satisfy demand. The entire industry, from gaming to car manufacturing, is affected by chip shortages right now. NVIDIA clearly feels now is the time to respond to GPU demand by ensuring what's likely to be its most popular new GPU is focused purely on gaming. Slight problem. It's software detection. You think somebody's not going to go in there and hack that driver out, or hack that detection out of the driver, or just
12 seconds use an later? Old beta? Yeah, they didn't think it through.
No, this is a push to get people to either one, sell people their mining processor, or at least make it look like they're trying to do something about the GPU shortage, other than just make more GPUs. But, Fox, you have anything on this one?
No, not really. I mean, I was hoping that, with the ASICs boards and things like that being more lucrative as far as, mining was going, that the graphics card prices would start coming back down to somewhat normal.
Well, there's still super high demand for them because the new line of NVIDIA chips is, way more efficient or way more performance or performative than the previous ones for the cost. But you also have a lot of people who are stuck at home because, we have to flatten the curve for a couple of weeks. I mean, a year and,
just 2 weeks to flatten the curve, man.
Yep. 2 weeks. They left off the part that it's 2 weeks and a year. Good. Oh, we are coming up on the year, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. Dude, this is going to go longer than a year.
Oh, well, it's probably going to be the entire Biden term. But politics aside, I actually bought an Antminer off eBay fairly cheap.
That's cool.
And that thing is loud as fuck. So I'm going to have
to. It can heat your house.
Well, that's actually what I was trying to do with it because my insulation downstairs isn't that great and it's cold. So I was thinking I can use this as a space heater. And if it didn't sound like a fucking leaf blower, I would be doing that right now.
Like what if you swapped out some of the fans on it, like Noctua or some quieter running fans, would it?
I looked into that, and actually there are people who make little circuits to send fake fan readings to the little controller board so that, they can do oil immersion or run other fans on it without the thing freaking out. I think I'm just going to build a baffle box.
Okay.
But that'll have to wait till after I move so I have some space to work with it. But I would like to play around with running it. This is not a serious investment. This is more playing with a technology toy. This is not making a serious investment into mining. Not planning on building a data center anytime soon. I want to see what I can do with it. That said, I pulled one of the boards out of it and looked at it. It's basically an array of those ASIC miners. You know, like you used to buy the little USB flash drive looking things that were a miner. Mm-hmm. It's basically arrays of those on boards in specialized hardware with little heat sinks on them. So I'm sure it's a better ASIC than the, you know, than the little USB boards used to be. But at the same time, it's still just a giant array of those ASIC processors in a box with, you know, really high RPM fans on it. And gotcha. It's I did try playing around with some different fans on it. Its firmware freaks out if it can't read high RPMs, because I have some Nakuas that I thought would work, and I put one of them on the front of it just to see what it did, and it basically threw a fan speed error and shut down. So it doesn't know what to do if it's not getting that 3,000 or 4,000 RPM speed.
Wow.
Gotcha.
So. Yeah, that's where you need the little thing that you know, lies to it about the speed, and then you just run the fans off something else. But no, I think a baffle box would be the way to go. And if I make one large enough, I can put my other servers and things like that in it. So, next article is from the BBC. Facebook blocks Australian users from viewing or sharing news.
Nothing, the fallout continue.
Nothing of value lost. Anyways,
no, it wasn't.
Facebook has blocked Australian users from sharing or viewing news content on the platform, causing much alarm over public access to key information. Wait a minute. Do these people really not know how to get links outside of Facebook?
Yeah, just keep going, man.
Remember how you said you've dealt with stupid people before?
You ain't seen stupid until you saw yesterday.
It comes in response to a proposed law which would make tech giants pay for news content on their platforms. This is the thing that Google tried to pull out of Australia over. Australians on Thursday woke up to find that Facebook pages of all local and global news sites were unavailable. Several government health and emergency pages were also blocked, something Facebook later asserted was a mistake. Those outside of the country are also unable to read or access any Australian news publications on the platform. The Australian government has strongly criticized the move, saying it demonstrated the immense market power of these digital social giants. Treasurer Josh Frydenberg. I'm sorry?
Frydenberg. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He sounds like a Frydenberg. Said that the ban on news information had a, quote, huge community impact, unquote. After about 17 million Australians, or about 17 million Australians visit the social media site every month. Well, didn't you say there's only something like 23 million Australians as it is?
27.
That's still a lot of your country using one website.
I know. It's fucking ridiculous, isn't it? But I thoroughly enjoyed it because the definition of news is newly received noteworthy information, especially about recent events. That's pretty much any communication on a website, right? So, dude, they burned everything called news. And suddenly everyone's flipping out because no one knows what the meaning of fucking words are anymore or refuses to use them. Because I saw this. They're like, they're getting rid of news. So I just set my watch and waited for the freak out. I knew what was about to happen. It was scorched earth on this because they went to their lawyers. Well, how do we do this? Well, news, you got to burn it all, man. That's what you said you were going to do, burn it all. So they burned it all. And it's just made me think, well, everyone's freaking out because they can't go to these. Hang on, these websites already exist. You don't need to go through Facebook. You're just adding extra steps.
I mean, it's like, seriously? Okay. You don't want anybody using your website? Cool. Everybody go use, I don't know, Reddit, Dig, Twitter, something else.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, there are other websites out there.
They are not the only game in town. You know, go use DuckDuckGo.
Start page.
Just people lost their shit yesterday. It wasn't the average person losing their shit. They're like, oh, it's not there anymore. I'll go to Google and type in that way, and they find
4chan,
the website.
For God's sake, something else.
Fuck, you'll get more out of it. Yeah, it's the amount of people that must just use Facebook as their homepage. Like, Remember how people used to just have Yahoo at the front as the, and then go everything from the internet was on Yahoo. They didn't go anywhere else or use anything else because it had all your sports, weather, news, shit on the front page. I think that's how people are using Facebook. And so, well, pretty much the government seems to be using Facebook instead of its own fucking servers. So when everything went down, they lost their shit. And I saw this coming. How do people in charge this fucking stupid?
I've been saying that for a while, actually. Yeah, like I said, we just watched them try to impeach somebody who was no longer in office. So
I mean, there's nobody in the fucking government lawyers who went, hang on, let's just get together with Facebook and hammer out a definition of news.
I like what Cycross just said. Facebook is the modern AOL.
Yeah, they fucking A, right?
You've got news.
Exactly. First, 30 seconds of ads. But, I mean, how come a lawyer didn't go, well, let's just hammer out what we're talking. Are we both on the same page on the definition of news? Because they were just thinking Channel 9, Channel 10, ABC, SBS, you know, those places, you know, newspapers, things like that. But I think Zuckerberg's lawyers went, no, we're going to use the definition of news and just fucking scorched earth and let your citizens get all outraged. Citizens weren't outraged. It was the government that were outraged that didn't see it coming, that all their shit was about to get fucked with. So either, and I don't want to believe in conspiracy, but I'm pretty sure Zuckerberg knew what he was doing, or somebody there at Facebook knew what they were doing. And they knew this shit would happen, but they're not getting the backlash from the Australian people. They're getting backlash from government entities because shit, now they have to set their own stuff up and be responsible. So now we have to hire admins and fucking, you know, dudes to build a back end, maintain servers. They've just realized that this is going to cost them money. So it's interesting to me. It's probably not interesting to the rest of the world, but no one gives a fuck. Apart from government agencies are now responsible for building and maintaining their own fucking networks. So look to see plenty of hacker news from Australia.
Just to finish out the article here, he said the government was committed to passing the law and that we would like to see them, Facebook, in Australia. But I think their actions today were unnecessary and wrong, he added. Google and Facebook have fought the law because they say it doesn't reflect how the internet works and unfairly penalizes their platforms. However, in contrast to Facebook, Google in recent days signed payment deals with three major Australian media outlets. Facebook's actions came just hours after Google agreed to pay Rupert Murdoch's News Corp for content from news sites across its media empire. Australian authorities had drawn up the law to level the playing field between tech giants and struggling publishers over profits. Of every $100 Australian spent on digital advertising in Australian media these days, $81 goes to Google and Facebook. But Facebook said the law left it facing a stark choice: attempt to comply with the law that ignores the realities of the relationship, or stop allowing news content on the services in Australia. With a heavy heart, we are doing the latter, they said in a blog post. Cycross is saying Google's making a lot of weird moves lately, and he's glad he's not a shareholder. Yeah.
When they took down the Do No Evil sign, some shit got freaky, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The law sought to penalize Facebook for content it didn't take or ask for. The company's local managing director, William Easton, said Facebook said it helped Australian publishers earn about $407 million last year through referrals, but for itself, the platform gained from news is minimal. Well, it's just more engagement on the site. Under the ban, Australian publishers are also restricted from sharing or posting any links on their Facebook pages. The national broadcaster, the ABC, and the newspapers like the Sydney Morning Herald and the Australian have millions of followers. Facebook's change also denied Australian access to many key government agencies, including police and emergency services, health departments, and the Bureau of Meteorology. Other pages for charities, politicians, sports groups, and other non-news organizations were also affected. Facebook later released a statement saying these pages had been inadvertently impacted and would be reinstated, though it did not give a deadline.
Bullshit.
Cykros, just the point I was making about impeachment was that it's the purpose is to get him out of office so you can pursue him in a criminal court. So I feel like it's just a extra wasted step. It's like, oh, okay, we'll go charge him in criminal court. He's not president anymore. It's fine. Yeah. That was my point. I don't think anybody thinks what happened in the Capitol, right. But yeah, I know
they can't. The simple fact they'd have to call witnesses. The minute you start calling witnesses, everything falls apart.
Well, that's the point, right? That's why they did what they did, is they knew in a criminal court it wouldn't go anywhere.
Anyway.
It pisses me off because I see it as a massive waste of time and money. That's why I keep ending up back at it. Other pages, spokesperson said the company had taken a broad definition of the term news content in the law. The ban sparked immediate backlash, with many Australians angry about their sudden loss of access to trusted and authoritative sources on Facebook.
Good God.
Several pointed out that Facebook was one crucial way which people received emergency updates about the pandemic and national disaster situations. Other raised concerns about misinformation now freely circulating on the site. It feels obviously very restrictive in what Facebook is going to allow people to do in the future, not only in Australia but around the world, Sydney man Peter Firth told the BBC. Amelia Marshall said she could not believe the firm's decision in the middle of a pandemic, adding, "I've made the long overdue decision to permanently delete my Facebook account." Human Rights Watch Australia director said Facebook was censoring the flow of information in the country, calling it a dangerous turn of events. Cutting off access to vital information to an entire country in the dead of the night is unconscionable, said Elaine Pearson.
Dangerous to our democracy.
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Oh, Cykros dropped out of the IRC. I guess he didn't like when we went back on politics. We need to stop talking about that.
Yeah. Anyway.
Australia's conservative government is standing by the law, which passed the House, blah, 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 blah. Okay. There's not much else here, just it's all summary. It is weird, though, because they're saying Facebook and Google have to pay these sites to link to their sites, which Facebook...
That's not how anything works.
Yeah, well, the Google and Facebook have a point, and that's not how the internet was set up. But...
Like we talked about before, it's like it's literally just a money grab. Like,
I think
they have a lot
is.
Of money. We want some of it.
Dude, it was just a shekel shakedown. That's all it was.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's what it was. At the same time, though, I don't have any great love of Facebook or Google, so I'm not sad about seeing them shook down. I don't think it's right.
Oh, no, I didn't want them shaken down. I just want them told there's the door, fuck off.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is it's
more
like,
the thing,
okay.
I'm more concerned about the precedent it sets.
Yeah. I mean, if it's like, okay, well, you guys are making too much money, you're too big. Yeah, okay, fine. You're going to censor news on your platform? Cool, I'll go somewhere else. And I think the fact that all these people have forgotten that they can do that is terrifying. Because the whole point of the internet is it's supposed to route around this kind of problem. Censorship is treated as network damage, and you just move on to another site to get what you need. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The whole idea that, oh, no, we have to have Facebook, we have to fleece them for our news sites, and they can't be allowed to control what's on their platform. I mean, granted, it's a dumb move on their part, but it's like, okay, well, you've just crippled the platform in your country. Go use something else. And I wouldn't blame Facebook and Google for pulling out, because it is kind of a dumb wall.
Yeah.
That is kind of how you make your point known. It's like, okay, you guys are going to pass a law that we can't work with. We can't do business in your country. So, I don't know. I just... At the same time, Google and Facebook do a lot of shady, weird shit. So I kind of don't mind seeing them getting bloodied up, but I'd like to see them get bloodied up the correct way. I don't know if I'm making sense.
the government just grabbed the tail of what they didn't even realize what they've grabbed on. They think Google's just going to forget what they did. Mm-hmm. Good luck having conservative government in this country ever again. Because our next election is going to be very interesting. But... lose morps.
No, I'm here. I was
moving on to the next story.
All right, next story. This one's hit
the hour mark. I need more water.
Oh fuck, we are close to the hour mark. All right, next story. This one's from The Verge. As part of its ongoing fight over Alabama warehouses' efforts to unionize, Amazon reportedly changed the timing of a traffic light outside of the warehouse, according to reporting by A More Perfect Union. Union organizers at the site had previously accused the company of altering the timings so that pro-union workers would not be able to canvass workers while stopped at the light. I'm trying to figure out how they think Amazon is fucking with a traffic light. it's not whether you should or shouldn't unionize. I want to understand what they think Amazon is doing. You know what I mean? It's like, Amazon actually have the power to fuck with traffic lights? They might. I don't know. I mean, are they running the traffic system through AWS? I mean, they could be.
I would say, would it surprise you that much?
No, not really. No. that's dystopian as fuck if they could. I mean, it's a small thing. It's a traffic light. But at the same time, that means they're fucking with city infrastructure to get their way. That's cyberpunk and dystopian as hell. Until recently, the altered timing on the traffic light outside the factory had been dismissed as a rumor. But More Perfect Union confirmed to Jefferson County officials that last year, Amazon notified the county of traffic delays during shift changes and asked the light to be changed. On December 15th, the county increased the green light duration in an effort to clear workers off the site faster. There's no indication that the county was made aware of the ongoing organization drive or any effect the traffic light changes might have on that effort. Workers at a Bessemer warehouse began their union election on February 8th, blah, 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 blah. Okay, they at least went to the government and had the government change the light on their behalf. That's not quite as dystopian as I was thinking, but you can see it from there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the writing is definitely all over the walls on that one. It's probably more of the, we'll be in a lot of shit if we get caught. So, I mean, I know we've already done this, but turn it back, call the government, ask them to do it for us. And if it's not what we like, we'll just, you know, slowly tweak it over time. Nobody will notice.
So, I mean, I would think if Amazon misrepresented themselves to the government to get the timing on that light change, I'd think that'd piss some county official off.
Yeah, I mean, they got the money to bribe any kind of county official anyway. But...
well, and we'd be dumb to assume that wasn't already going on. You're right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next story. It's from Ars Technica. Apple N1 native malware has already begun to appear. Of course it has.
And we're shocked why?
We're not. I just thought it was funny and worth pointing out. Because Macs don't get viruses, dude.
That's because they had a shitty chunk of the market share.
Yeah, Chromebooks just passed them. I'm sure that's because of schools.
Yeah.
But
well, and all the offices and, you know, things like that that they got into. Like, that was their biggest fuck-up is not... keeping in the schools like they were. Because I remember, like, when I first started, you know, it was like all the Apple IIe's and things like that were like all the school computers. And so everyone was learning on a Mac. And then they tried to fleece the schools for more money, and IBM stepped in.
Well, and then Microsoft gave them free licenses for Windows and Office. And that's what we were talking about earlier, because I thought about using the story about Chromebooks. So, I figured that Google was trying to do what Microsoft did in the 90s, which was get everyone in the schools using their platform so that when they went to their jobs, their jobs would be inclined to continue to actually buy the Microsoft software because
that's what they were trained on. They didn't have to spend money reinventing their wheel kind of thing. Yeah.
Right. So with Chromebooks, I have a feeling it's going to be the same way. You're going to have all these kids who went to school using Chromebooks. And then when they get in the office and they're like, Windows, what's this fucking shit? No, Google services. We all got to be on Google Drive. And
yeah.
You know, and most, you know, HR managers.
Let's use the cloud.
It's like, all right, fine, whatever. And just, you know, I'm sure that's, I mean, seriously, you want to think about the nightmare it's going to be to retrain an entire workforce to use something not Google Docs if they've all learned on Chromebooks?
Yeah.
So. Last year, Apple released MacBooks and Mac Minis powered by the new ARM CPU, the Apple M1. A few months later, the malware authors are already targeting the new hardware directly. Wired interviewed Mac security researcher Patrick Wardle, who discovered an M1 native version of the long-running Mac-targeted Pyrite adware family. ARM CPUs have a very different instruction set than traditional x86 desktop and laptop CPUs do, which means the software designed for one instruction set architecture can't run on the other without help. M1 Max can run x86 software with a translation layer called Rosetta, but native M1 apps, of course, run much faster. And they've, you know, you're talking about comparisons they showed in another article. When it comes to malware, Apple users have long benefited from the minority status of their platform. 10 years ago, macOS's operating system market share was only 6.5%, and few malware authors bothered to target it at all. But today, that market share is approaching 20%. That increase in popularity has brought malware vendors along with it. The macOS malware ecosystem is still tiny and relatively crude compared to the one plaguing Windows, but it's very real. The incentive for malware authors to target M1 directly isn't enormous. Most existing macOS malware will run on an M1-equipped Mac just fine via Rosetta 2. Malware authors also don't generally care much about performance. Your CPU cycles don't cost them anything, after all. But there are still some benefits to targeting the new hardware directly. The more efficient malware code is less, the less likely owners of computers will notice it or care enough to, you know, root it out. Wardle used a researcher account at VirusTotal to look for instances of M1 native malware. The actual search he used, okay, they've got a short string here listed out. So, blah, 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 blah. So he found something called GoSearch 22. M1 native malware found triggered 24 separate malware detection engines. 17 of those 24 positives were generic, but the remaining 7 matched it with signatures for Pyrite adware. Pyrite is an extremely long-running malware family that began on Windows and is eventually ported to macOS. The presence on macOS was first published by researcher Armit Serper in 2016, with a notable follow-up from Serper in 2017. So they keep going here, but pretty much they found a version of this malware that had, in fact, been compiled for the new Mac chips, which shouldn't surprise anybody. It's probably portable C code. All they had to do was just rerun the compiler with flags to cross-compile it for an M1. So, that's, you know, it's not, you know, they were like, oh my god, you know, this is a completely different instruction set. No, most modern development systems, they use higher-level languages. We're not writing fucking assembler these days. Okay. I still occasionally break out the Commodore 64 and write a little bit of 6502 assembler. That's different. I know very few people who do actual real work writing assembler code on modern processor architectures. It's okay, write C or C++ and compile it. And if you want to recompile it for a new architecture, you take your existing Mac code, you change the flag, and you recompile it. Apple was making that extremely easy because they were trying to get developers to port their apps. If you use their Swift or C# code, or is it C# on Mac?
I have no idea.
No idea, man.
I haven't touched a Mac in...
Yeah.
No, it's not. It's Objective-C. C# is the Microsoft version of the language. I got mixed up. My bad. But yeah, if you wrote it, if the malware is written in one of the existing Mac native toolkits, They just change the flags and recompile it. It's not that surprising. I guess it's. I guess they're just more surprised that somebody bothered to make the platform-specific build of the malware. So, anyways, last story for tonight. This one's from the Next Web, and it's just a terrifying concept. I mean, I don't even want to think about the horror this is going to bring. With apps like Clubhouse holding the limelight at the moment, audio is a big focus for app makers. Today, Twitter is launching its voice DM feature in selected countries, including India, Brazil, and Japan.
Oh, no.
Instead of text, they want people to record snippets of their voice and use that for direct messages.
No. That's fucking
although, we could get some really, really funny sound bites out of this. And with the new deepfake technology coming out.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm kind of retarded.
Yeah, no, this is a bad idea.
If you're a Twitter user in one of these countries, you'll be able to send a voice DM to anyone starting today. However, there's a time limit of 140 seconds, and that's a bummer. If I want to rant about a show to a friend, it could take more than 2 minutes, 20 seconds, Twitter. For God's sake. The feature will be rolling out on both iOS and Android users, but you could also listen to voice DMs on the web. This feature doesn't add too much value for the author. Rather chat with friends on WhatsApp or Signal than Twitter. But if you use Twitter DMs, it might be handy. So besides, apparently Twitter is rolling out voice tweets as well. So.
Yeah.
The only one this actually benefits is Ben Shapiro. Dude, he's going to crank you out a fucking novel. You know? Works for him, no one else.
Whoa.
Minor malfunction.
Whoa.
Yeah, you might want to stop that.
I'm trying. Soundboard crashed.
Oh. Yeah. That's a crash and a half.
Well, time to start looking into new soundboard software. Holy shit.
I mean, if you're going to crash, that's the way to do it. Annoying and loud.
Wow. Let's try that again.
Clearly, the soundboard is a woman.
All right. I don't know what the hell happened there. That was unexpected. Anyways,
soundboard is female.
Time to
loud and annoying.
So I've been doing some Python work this week, and I found this page extremely handy. It's just a big list of Python resources. So I thought I would throw this out in the link tonight. It's a whole bunch of different stuff. I was specifically reading up on async and some WebSockets work and some serial device work, actually. So being able to get to the links on async from here was pretty handy for me because I haven't had to mess with it that much. And it's not confusing. It's just it's easy to make mistakes with. So having a good reference was handy. Anyways, I don't know if you do much with Python. I'm sure. Are you? Well, not to make a judgment case here, but I doubt you do much Python coding there, are you?
Yeah, and make the dyslexic code. Yeah, that's a great fucking idea. Yeah, so, make the dyslexic use a fucking interface that requires correct spelling.
But yeah, it's just
and punctuation.
It's just a big collection of links to resources on Python coding, so it was handy.
I've been meaning to pick up Python and, you know, mess around with it, but I just have not at all yet.
Go grab.
It's just one of those things. I'm like, I'll get around to it eventually. I know.
Yeah, go grab the community version of PyCharm, and that's an easy place to start, especially because it does a lot of code completion for you. So that's handy if you're trying to remember how to put some stuff together where it does half of it for you. So
yeah.
It's one of those languages that on the surface is pretty simple, but as you start digging in to get some more serious work done with it, it can get, well, it's still coding.
A little hairy. Yeah.
So Anyways, that's all I've got for tonight. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site, the subreddit. In the IRC tonight, myself, Sardonyx, Cyber Dystopia, Cyber Lard, Psychros, and the Coffee Maker. Fox, closing thoughts.
Well, you know, we've whittled down all of our fast food restaurant options to just Taco Bell because the rest of them got lost in the console wars. You know, at least we'll be able to use the hotspot to check our government-appointed Facebook for what they've decided will be our news for the day.
Are you future news? Closing thoughts.
I concur. The end.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Nosko goes down and call the night.
Shut up, Wesley.